Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on privacy when we come back. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity, from bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security. But it is also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. The federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American. That's according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. Closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. Now, a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government, they found that the state, that's the state of New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. Every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. This information about you is gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how the government, the banks, the insurance companies, and industry gains all of this information? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for anyway? Well, knowing how this information is gathered and what information is stored and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Now, ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. Remember, it's free of charge. Let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. So just call the number, 417-273-4967, and ask for yours. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just send an email, click on the email machine, and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Hey, I had Dirk go to the computer the other day, get online, and take a look at some of these privacy issues and privacy articles. Here's one, questions and answers on the Pentagon's Total Information Awareness Program. And Bush's secret surveillance state, and unpatriotic acts, the FBI's power to rifle through your records and personal belongings without telling you, and as Senate immigration bill stalls, the ACLU calls for much-needed fixes, says lawmakers must act to protect the due process and privacy. With databases everywhere, the U.S. government may be turning into Big Brother. Maybe turning into Big Brother, they say. Bigger monster, weaker change, the growth of an American surveillance society. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. Hell, there's 100 of these articles out there. Some of them are kind of big. This one here, you know, Unpatriotic Acts. How many pages is this? Oh, shucks, it's 20 pages. 20-page article here. This other one over here is just as big. Bigger monster, weaker change. And remember, I mentioned I'm not complaining. The FBI is not intruding into my privacy. The IRS isn't bothering me. And that's because all of the information that government is collecting from you, they're collecting from public institutions or public places of information gathering. For instance, I mentioned this the other day, if the government wants to know what my English grades were in 1957 at Ferndale High School, those records are public. Those records are there. I mentioned to you earlier, there's nothing that I can do about those records. I don't have to create any more, but the ones that I've already created, they're out there. You know, your military records are all out there, but you don't have to create any more military records. Your banking records are already out there, but you don't have to create any more banking records. The point I'm making is very simple. You can start being private starting today, and in about 4 years, you'll just drop right off the radar screen. I know, I've already done it. I have electricity, but I don't have an account with the White River Valley Electric Co-op. And I live on a farm, but I'm not registered or recorded anywhere as a landowner. Now, boys and girls, the first plank to the Communist Manifesto calls for the abolition of all right to property. The public policy of the United States, and I presume for the rest of you people in Europe, you Anglo-Saxons in Canada and Australia, is to abolish private property rights. Why get in the way of government? Why get in the way of public policy? I'm using property, but I don't have to own it, and I certainly don't want anybody to know what I've got and what I don't have, and that's what privacy is all about. You don't know what Donald Trump owns or doesn't own. There's a public persona of Donald Trump, and then there's the real Donald Trump, the private person. And we don't know jack diddly about what Donald Trump has or doesn't have or what he thinks or doesn't think. He's a pretty private guy. And you can be just as private as Donald Trump, Bill Gates, and George Bush. And let me tell you, boys and girls, those people are very, very private people. There's the public perception or the public persona, and then there's the private. I've got a public perception, but then I've got a private life also. You don't know anything about me privately, and I'm not telling. My old daddy told me one time, he said, a secret son is where you know something that nobody else knows, and when you tell one other person, it's not a secret, no more. So I've got a lot of secrets, and I don't share them with anybody. I just keep them to myself, and I do my thing in life. And if you don't know about it, it's not a problem to you, is it? But if you know about it, it might be a problem. Now listen to some of these acts, unpatriotic acts. Medical records, magazine subscriptions. I don't subscribe to any magazines, and I don't make any medical records. Now I've got some from years past. But boy, they're 20 or 30 years old now. And if I go to a doctor, and I go to a dentist once in a while, and I go to a doctor, I'm very cautious and very careful about any medical records that are being created. And there aren't any. Now, emails. Now, you people can email me all day long, but you know, that email account doesn't belong to me. I don't subscribe to any email accounts. I get it over somebody else's email. You got bookstore, databases, library cards, and you've got, bookstore purchases and library circulation records and genetic information. Hey, I don't have any library cards. If I want to read something, I go buy it. I just walk in and plunk my money down and buy it. Somebody says, that costs you a lot more. Sure, but then my privacy is worth a lot more than yours is, partner. There are people out there whose privacy isn't worth a tinker's damn, and I don't blame them. I mean, I'm not opposed to library cards. But don't you people understand that under the Patriot Act, the FBI can go into your local library and access their computer database and find out what books you're reading. Now, you know, that oven by itself is pretty innocuous, but you know, you might be reading Mein Kampf. You might subscribe to the Ku Klux Klan newsletter. Now, I know there's a lot of you saying, well, you shouldn't subscribe to the Ku Klux Klan newsletter. Well, wait a minute. There are people out there that if they knew what you subscribe to, like Reader's Digest or Archaeological Review Today, would say, oh, those are subversive publications. You shouldn't subscribe to those. Who is to determine for us what we should read or what we shouldn't read? Isn't that censorship? Now, I presume that the government is all-knowing and all-loving and all-caring, and that they're very concerned about what you read. I'm not. I don't know what's good for you to read and what isn't good for you to read. You don't see me running around behind your back trying to find out what you're reading by accessing your computer files, but the FBI is. So it must be pretty important. What you're reading must be pretty important, or the FBI wouldn't be running around trying to read or to find out what you're reading. So one of the ways that we make a determination as to what it is we want other people to know about us is by controlling those facets of information or those facets of our personal private lives that we can control. I cannot control my high school English records of 1957, but I can control my library use today, and I can prevent the FBI from finding out what I'm reading. And I'm going to do that. So I don't have a library card. I can keep my medical records private because I deal with a couple of doctors who are students of mine. And I said, now listen, doc, I'm not asking you to break any laws or to get me any heroin or cocaine, but I don't want any records. I was in a dentist's office. I got to share this one with you because it's kind of funny. I have a dentist. I'm not going to tell you who he is. I don't want to get him into trouble, but he's a pretty nice guy. And I was in his office, and he said, well, the law requires that when I take on a new patient, I have to have this information filled out. And I said, oh, that's no problem, doc. So I filled out the entire form. They have a form here in Missouri. Now, this isn't a law that requires me to fill it out. It's a law that requires the doctor to have me fill it out. See the way the government is pretty sneaky? See, they know they can't make me do it, but they're going to make the doctor. That's because the doctor's bonded, licensed, and insured. And if he doesn't, then they'll jerk his license, and then he loses his livelihood. See how they've got this doctor by the short hairs, don't they? He's in public business, and they regulate and control public business. And so they take private people like me, and they want to get this information. So they say, here, doc, you ask Gordon for this information, and if you don't, we'll jerk your license. So I sat there and I filled out the entire form. And I put First Amendment objection and Second Amendment objection. Well, I didn't second, but fourth and fifth and tenth. And I put no, none, and never. And I answered every question on the form. Every one. God, it was the highlight of my day. And I gave it to the doc and I said, here, put this in your file. There it is. And now you have the form that the state requires you to get from every patient that comes in. And there's no information on, well, I got my name. They know that I'm a customer or a patient of Dr. So-and-so over here who fills holes in my teeth. How's that? The reason I point that out is because where there's a will, there's a way. Now, there's 92 things that your government, or not just government, but insurance companies, or not just insurance companies, but dentists and doctors, and all of these people, all these businesses out here are after. Now, for instance, last time we talked about telephone numbers, past and present, internet accounts, pager numbers, addresses. Well, listen, after this is filled out, then they want the list of habits, hobbies, and emotional descriptors, and these will generally be compiled next. So note that some of these are also covered below, and the difference being that those covered above will be the blatantly obvious versions above, would be where things like your preferring goth clothing and makeup would be noted. Someone wearing all black clothing, black lipstick, black clothing and black lipstick, hair dyed black, etc., does tend to stick out a bit, doesn't it? Remember those kids over at Columbine, and they were wearing black, you know, the killers? Yeah, that does kind of stand out a little bit, doesn't it? Now, here would be where they'd stick down that you'd always wear blue jeans and t-shirts. Not nearly so obvious, but you can never tell what information can be useful. And so they're after this information, and they write this down on your dossier. So if I was putting this dossier on you together, I would want to know some more things, like your preferred manner of dress. I would want to know whether you're a smoker or a non-smoker. I want to know what you smoke. I want to know how often you smoke, and I want to know what brand you smoke. Then I want to know about your nervous habits, such as, do you bite your fingernails? Do you scuff your feet? Do you have any tics? You know, you blink your eye. My Uncle Buster had a tic. He had an eye tic. And he, you know, you'd be sitting there talking to Uncle Buster, and his eye would just be fluttering. You know, he just, and he would wink his eye. It was kind of like he was winking at you. Uncle Buster. Now listen, that's a peculiar trait. And when we want to identify you, when we want to find you, we want to inform our policeman that this guy's got this nervous habit, this nervous trait, and it's unconscious to him. He can't see that. He can't know that. Nobody else has it, just Uncle Buster. He's the only guy in my lifetime that I've ever seen that had that nervous tick, that eye twitch. He was winking at you. And it was his left eye. Always the left eye, and you could tell that. I had an experience, you know, with my Uncle Otto. He had a nervous twitch. He used to expand the nostrils of his nose. He'd be sitting there talking to you, and his nose would work. He had that nervous tick. Let me tell you, boys and girls, that identifies you just as much as your eye color or your height, weight, shape, and form. In fact, it is so distinctive that my Uncle Otto was the only guy that twitched his nose, and my Uncle Buster was the only guy that winked his eye. We want to know things like, what type of entertainment do you prefer? Movies, music, theater, books, gambling, significant dates like birth dates and anniversaries. Preferred types of transport, such as planes, trains, or automobiles, or any forms that you can't use as well, such as, you know, I can't use airplanes because I'm acrophobic. Preferred makes and models of cars, as well as colors, nicknames, any aliases, AKAs, also known as, sometimes called an alias, favorite vacation sites. God, this guy loves Acapulco. Favorite areas of the country. He likes to go skiing out in Sun Valley. Known foreign languages, especially Spanish or French. Addictions. Is this guy addicted to alcohol, drugs, gambling, women? What is it? Hobbies. Favorite sports and or sports teams. Zodiac signs, particularly if it's known to, or if this person is known to follow astrology. The occupation or occupations which you have been trained for. Schools attended, especially colleges, tech schools, and high schools. Organizational membership, fraternal organizations, certifications, degrees, or licenses, especially if they're rare or have to be renewed. Religious beliefs and or affiliations, both the one that you were born with as well as any that you have been converted to. Now, with all of these in place, then we're ready for a list of records which may now be obtained and examined with an eye towards fitting it all into a pattern. Now, the reason that we gather all of this information, 92 of them, now so far we're up to 57. That's 57 items that I've covered so far, is because we're building a profile of who you are. And with this profile, when we put all of this together, we can tell you how you're going to vote, or we can cause you to vote for the candidate that we want. We can find you wherever you go to hide. We will know where to look, and we'll know what to be looking for. We know what it is that we can appeal to, your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. We know what kind of cars we can sell to you. We know what your weaknesses are. For instance, if you're a spy and you want to go to work for the CIA, they put you through these kinds of psychological profiling and tests to see what your weak points are. And so here you are a spy in Paris, you know, working for the CIA, and I send this slinky-looking woman over, and she's working, of course, for me, and I'm working, of course, for the KGB, and we know that you have a weakness for women. So we're going to attack your weakness. Well, the police do the same thing. So does the government agencies. The government agencies follow that. And so do the ad agencies when they go to sell you automobiles and snow machines and hula hoops and houses and homes and stocks and bonds. We're looking for your weak points. And remember, the whole purpose for all of this information gathering is to sell you something. We're going to sell you a political candidate. We're going to sell you a new car. We're going to sell you on some idea. We're going to sell you a condominium. We're going to sell you a house. We're going to sell you a business. It's always aimed at trade, commerce, business, and industry. And I'm not saying they're all bad. Hell, that slinky woman from the KGB is probably a neat hunk. But are you really sure that that's the woman you want to buy? Are you really sure that's the car you want to buy? Are you really sure that that's the condominium that's for you? Now, once you get control of, once you find out what it is that I use to jerk your strings, to identify you, to cause you to buy the products that I want to sell you. George Bush, in the last election, sold us a product. He sold us an idea. And we bought his idea as opposed to John Kerry's. That's what it's all about. And Karl Rove is given the credit for being the genius behind George Bush because he figured out what it is that most Americans would buy. And George went out and he pushed that. Now, 18 months later, are you satisfied with what you bought? Because most of the people that voted for George Bush now are saying, gee, I voted incorrectly. I didn't know about that. And I'm against this, and I'm against that. But then, you know, that was 18 months ago. Now get this, there's a new election coming up. And these very same forces are at work right now, working on you, working on your mind. They want to know these 92 things about you. And they're going to package their candidate, and he's going to tell you what it is that you want to hear. Now get this. If the candidate did not know what it was that you wanted to hear, didn't know what you were thinking, you just kept, you know, like a poker player, you know, you're keeping your cards close to the vest. He couldn't predict the next election. When they come to you, you know, once in a while they call on the phone here and they want to know what my opinions are. They ask me, you know, such things as my opinion of George Bush and the Congress or what's my opinion of this or that product, and I never tell them. I never answer their questions. Not that that changes a whole lot, because they'll go ask another 1,000 people. But I don't want to influence them. I don't want them to know what I'm thinking. There's a body of people out here. We don't tell. We don't talk. We keep our cards close to the vest. We're private people. And we keep what we know under our hats. Now, with all of these in place, there's a list of records that may now be obtained and examined with an eye towards fitting a pattern. And that is, we now want to see your police records. We want to know what your police records are, local, state, and federal, any prison time, military records, court records, local, state, and or federal. We want to know what kind of litigation you've been involved in and what was the outcome of the litigation. We want to see your tax records, local, state, and federal. We want your business records, utilities records, insurance company records, medical records, telephone records, bank records, credit card records, creditors listing, credit history, and property records and lists from the county assessor's office. And hey, why do you think George Bush is using the National Security Agency to gain just that information right there? Because they want to control you. And the more information they have about you, the better they can control you. The better they can control society. They can control what you think. They can control how you vote. They can control how you act and respond. These big riots that they're planning here, I'm saying riots, these big demonstrations, like up in Chicago with all of these Mexicans, you know, these illegal immigrants. That's orchestrated. That's not spontaneous. That's not the immigrants who said, hey, let's stage this demonstration. That's your government organizing and staging these demonstrations to provoke the white people to a violent reaction, to kill a bunch of Mexicans, to get some Mexicans to kill a bunch of whites so that the government can impose martial law. I mean, there's a method to the madness. I mean, these people that are in charge of government, these people aren't crazy. These people aren't nitwits and dunderheads. These people may, in your view, be nuts, crazy, or something, but they're not. They have a plan, and they're executing the plan. They're very private people. You don't know what their plans are. It's called the conspiracy theory. See, I'm one of those conspiracy nuts. I believe in the conspiracy theory of history. I don't deny it. And then the normal people, see, they come along and they laugh at me and they say, oh, he's one of those right-wing radical reactionary nut fruitcake cases. Well, okay. But I'm a private one. I'm a private one, boys and girls. Now, I don't want people to know about my tax records, so I don't create any. I don't want you to know about my business records, so I don't have any. I don't want you to know about my utility records, so I don't have any of those. I don't practice insurance, so there aren't any insurance company records. I don't have any medical records. I don't use doctors. I don't have any telephone company records. I don't have any telephones. I don't have any bank records. I don't use banks. I don't need credit card records. I don't have any credit cards. I don't have any creditors listing. I'm a deadbeat. I don't have any credit. I don't have any credit history. There might be a credit history out there that runs up to 1978, but since 1978, there's no credit history. I've never had any credit since 78. Now, you might sit there and say, well, then you're living like a hermit. You're not living like a real person. Well, I'm living like a real private person. See, I'm not public. That's why I don't subscribe to public utilities. Now, I'm not wanting for anything. If there's anything that I'm wanting for or that I need and don't have or desire and can't obtain, I don't know what it is. You know, I'm perfectly satisfied in life. I'm not. Of course, I don't drive a Maserati, but then I'm not into cars. You know, cars aren't my thing. If I was into anything, I'd be flying a Twin Beach or something. You know, I kind of liked airplanes, but, you know, I'm getting to an age now, you know, where the family that flies together dies together. And when I was young and had eternal life, I flew my airplane under bridges and power lines. Today, I stopped flying. If I was going to fly, I'd want to fly on the 747 with somebody up front that actually knew what he was doing. And they won't let me do that anymore because I don't have the identification. So I guess you could sit there and say, well, see, you can't fly. You know, you can't fly in commercial airplanes. Yeah, but then I don't want to bend over and let somebody spread my cheeks and look up my anus either. My butt's pretty private. I didn't want to open that up to some airport screener. And I'll tell you something else. When I go into a Walmart store and the greeter in there says, bend over and spread your cheeks, that'll be my last trip to Walmart, too. So just get that in mind, Walmart, if you've got it in your head that you want to follow the airlines over there. I don't know. I guess most Americans don't care. After all, it's for health, safety, and welfare of the public, isn't it? Hey, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement, and the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the webpage. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. For your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order your free CD package, general law CD package, just call us at the Law School and ask for it. It's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember the website georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, talking about privacy. 92 things that a skip tracer, a policeman, a sheriff, or an insurance company, the CIA, the spy networks, the FBI, anybody who wants to control you wants to know these things about you. And the average Joe Sixpack doesn't see that there's any way that he can be controlled by somebody else's knowledge concerning his credit card records, or his credit listing, or his credit history, or property records, such as houses or apartments or whatever it is you might own or have interest in. So I just mentioned to you that I can control you totally, and indeed our society is totally controlled. Totally. The last election, boys and girls, 96% of the incumbents were returned to office. 96%. Those incumbents know as much about you as possible, and then they tailor their program, they tailor their policies, they tailor their promises to what it is you want to hear. Now, in the United States, we have two choices. You can vote for a Republican or a Democrat. Both are controlled by the Committee of 300. It doesn't make any difference to the Committee of 300 how you vote, as long as you vote Republican or Democrat. In the insurance industry, we don't care what insurance company you buy your insurance policy for. All we're concerned about is that you buy insurance. And once we make insurance compulsory, every insurance company is going to get his fair share. We just want to make sure that the law requires that you buy insurance. And so we've done that with auto insurance. Auto insurance, by the way, is a neat monopoly. They pay out 11 cents for every dollar's worth of premiums they collect. That's a very profitable business. And you have to buy it. It's the law. Remember? Now, there's a solution to that. It's called a bond. There's another story that goes along with that. I won't cover it here. But in her private business school, I was talking to some students here this week, and in asking them, one student pays $800 a year, and the other student pays $500 a year for auto insurance. So I asked everybody in the class, I said, when was the last time you had an auto insurance claim? And one of them had a claim last week. He had an accident last week. One of them had a claim 20 years ago, and one of them has never had a claim. They've all been paying insurance all their lives. The one paying $500 a year over the last 20 years has paid in, $500 a year for 10 years. That's $10,000 he's paid in. And 20 years ago, he had a claim for $10,000. $5,000. He's paid in 10, but he had a claim for $5,000. The guy that paid $800 a year in has been paying insurance premiums. He's an older guy. $800 a year. He's been paying in the maximum. Well, he's been buying insurance. He hasn't always been paying $800 because, 40 years ago, $40, $50, $80 a year was your premium. But he's been paying these premiums. He never had a claim. And we're talking about strict liability and limited liability. And, of course, government and the insurance industry has us practicing limited liability. So here's the bottom line. Would you be better off practicing the law of God and strict liability, or would you be better off practicing limited liability with insurance? And, everybody's been taught and trained, insurance, of course. Well, you haven't done the arithmetic. Remember the two guys I just told you about? Well, strict liability means that you got to pay for all of your damages. Well, let's see. How much damage does the average driver cause in an automobile accident? In other words, you take all the automobile accidents that occur in America in any given year, and what's the average price? And it's $1,835. In Los Angeles, the premiums for a family is $3,500 a year. In New Jersey, if you've got three daughters driving, and in New Jersey, which is kind of a high-risk state, it's $7,000 a year. Here in the Midwest, if you're rural, it's $800 a year. So you're going to pay somewhere between $800 and $7,000. In the neighborhood of $1,500 a year probably would be the nationwide average, something on that order. $1,500 to $2,000 a year, probably average. And the average automobile accident costs $1,835, or about 1 year's premiums. And how often can you expect to have an accident? The answer, once every 32 years, on average. So you're going to pay your insurance premiums for 32 years and have an $1,835 wreck. And the insurance companies need this information so that they can sell you insurance. And listen, you people all buy insurance. Now, I just gave you the answer. Strict liability is better for you. Limited liability is better for the insurance companies and government because the government taxes the insurance companies. And if you practice strict liability, there's no money to be made. There's a lot of money for you to save, and if you saved that money, you'd be spending it for something else. You wouldn't be spending it on insurance premiums. You'd be spending it on vacations in Hawaii or a carnival cruise or something else, new cars or whatever. But in order to sell you this insurance, in order to sell you the incumbent who you're going to vote for in the upcoming election this November, we have to have information about you so that we can tailor our product, so we can control the way, the irrational exuberance that you're going to display. Now, after I get hold of your credit history and your creditors and your property records, next we need to compile as complete a list as possible on the potential contacts that you're going to make, such as contacts with parents and step-parents and spouses, children, siblings, friends, roommates, mistresses, or the male equivalent, business partners, personal doctors, persons that you owe money to or persons that owe you money, accountants, enemies, you know, enemies, just in case they find you first or have useful information about you. And then finally, a list of significant dates will also be compiled, which will be used to determine the most likely contact times for each person. And these will include Mother's Day, Father's Day, anniversaries, anniversaries of your parents, anniversaries of your siblings, and anniversaries of your friends. Significant years, family and class reunions, golden wedding anniversary coming up, and so on. Christmas and Easter, or the equivalent religious holidays, such as Kwanzaa or Hanukkah. 4th of July, Labor Day, or other traditional vacation holidays. Birthdays, Thanksgiving, and significant medical dates, such as checkups, appointments, and prescriptions, things like that. Now again, these things of and by themselves are innocuous, but when they're all taken together, they paint a profile about you. It's this kind of information that helps us select a jury. When we have this kind of information and we apply this to a person, and we run this information through our profiling program, we can tell just about how you're going to vote. We know whether or not, we can figure out whether or not you're pro or anti-abortion, whether you're pro death penalty or opposed. And we can see whether you're a liberal or whether you're a conservative. There are companies that actually pick juries. They take this information and you pay them, it's about $35,000. And in the Kennedy trial down in Florida, they used this to select the jury. And it worked because the Kennedy jury acquitted him. Now, the average guy on the street does not have that kind of money. This kind of information benefits moneyed interests. It benefits insurance companies. It doesn't do anything for Joe Sixpack. It benefits ExxonMobil, but it doesn't benefit Sally Housewife. Now, one of the things that I noticed years ago was that when I went to the bank, the banker would hand me a piece of paper, and he would say, here, fill this out. It was a guardian-ward relationship in which my banker was my guardian, and I was his vassal, and he would collect this information about me, and he had a lot of information in my dossier. And he would look back and he'd say, oh, I see here you've made great progress here in this area. I said, ooh, look at this, new machinery, new pickups, new equipment. And look at this, you know, your net worth has gone up $50,000 in the last year. And he's very impressed and he smiles and pats me on my little pointed head and says, yeah, we'll give you another line of credit for $20,000, Gordon. I've been through that and I understand how that game is played. And then I'd go back to my factory. And some guy like you'd come in and he'd want a job, and I'd hand you a piece of paper, and you'd fill it out dutifully, and I'd look at your piece of paper and say, ah, I see here that you've got 6 years' experience as a cabinet maker. Ah, look at this. Why, you have this or that degree. Oh, gosh, well, you know. And then I hire. It's a master-servant relationship. How would you like to be the master? One day I woke up and I said, I like giving pieces of paper to people and having them fill out these pieces of paper for me. I like playing Edward G. Robinson in the Exodus. I like being the whip holder. I don't like it when I go to my banker and I have to kowtow to him. So I thought, well, I'm going to make some changes here. And I did. I made some changes. And now when you come to me and you say, gee, I'd like a job, I don't hand people pieces of paper anymore and intrude upon their privacy. I wouldn't want you to hand me a piece of paper and ask me what my social security number is, or whether or not I've ever been locked up in prison, or whether or not I've ever been to a psychiatrist, or whether or not I use Preparation H on my hemorrhoids. So I'm not going to ask you that. I'm not going to be nosy and ask you to give me personal information that I myself do not want to give to others. Policemen, they're nosy people. Sheriffs and sheriff's deputies, politicians, government employees. pollsters. These are nosy people. They ask personal questions. They want to know this information so they can better control, better predict how you're going to behave so that they can milk this cash cow a little more effectively. Well, I'm not trying to milk you, so I don't think I need the information. And when I look in the scripture, I find thou shalt not steal, which is the basis of personal property rights, and is a symbiotic relationship with this thing called privacy. That like a pilot fish in a shark's mouth, privacy and property go together. Can't have one without the other. You can't have privacy without property, and you can't have property without privacy. So I said, well, I'd like to have both property and privacy. And then I've got both, and I'm happy as a clam at high tide. See, the government isn't trying to take my property away from me because they don't know that I've got any property. And I'm not telling. Let me assure you, if the government believed for a minute that I had any property, they'd be on me like flies on stink. They'd be on me like a frog on a June bug trying to take it away from me. It's always been that way. It's nothing new. And that's because government, of and by itself, is a net predator. It's like a tick on a dog's ear. You see, the government needs the host, but the host does not need the parasite. A highway patrolman is a parasite. A farm worker is a producer. You take a guy who's out here bucking bales and milking cows, he's producing something in trade, commerce, business, and industry that we all need. The highway patrolman needs milk to drink, he needs milk for his kids, he needs food and fiber. So does the ranch hand. So does the dairyman. The milkman, he needs the same milk. He needs the same food and fiber. The difference is the highway patrolman produces none and consumes much. And the farm laborer, he produces much and consumes less than he produces. Consumes less than he produces. Now you extrapolate that through society. And the parasites need information so that they can stay on the host. You know, if the host ever finds out that he's got a tick on him, you ever reach around and you've got a little itch, and you get the scratch and the itch, and you feel a little bump, and you pull up your pant leg, and there he is, a blood-sucking tick. Hell, I don't need him. Now, I can't begrudge the tick. After all, he needs me. He needs to eat like everybody else, you know. But he needs to eat on somebody else, not me. So I pull this tick off of me and I reach down and I smash him between my thumbnails. So I don't need you. Now, from the point of view of the highway patrolman, he says, well, I'm a necessary part of the entire cog of civilization. Why, without me, you'll have chaos. Oh, no, no. No, we'll have greater production. Because see what happens here when you do away with the highway patrolman over here, you get rid of the guy that's getting in the way of the guy that's actually producing. Yeah, that's right. You know, we had life before highway patrolmen. We had life before we had guys, you know, giving us tickets and taking our livelihood away from us because we didn't buckle our seatbelt, because we didn't buy insurance, because we didn't register our buggies, or because we didn't have a license to ride our horse. Yeah, there was life. There was productivity. There was great wealth. There was greater wealth then than there is now. So if you're wondering why the rich get rich, or rich get richer, and the poor get poorer, the more regulations, the more laws, the more loss of property and the more loss of privacy that you experience, the poorer you're going to become. And your government isn't through yet. They want a national identification card. The government doesn't want to know less about you. They're not satisfied with what they know about you now. They want to know more. They want more knowledge about you and your personal habits and about how you act and react and behave than they have now or have had in the past, so that they can control you more effectively and get more milk out of you. There comes a point in time, however, when the system breaks down. All governments do this. All governments carry it to the max, and all governments collapse, just like the Roman Empire or Egypt or Assyria, Babylon. They all go their separate ways. And it's always caused internally. I shouldn't say always. Mostly caused internally. Once in a while, there'll be some foreign army come in, like the American army destroyed the Third Reich, but that's rare. Most of the time, they just collapse like the Soviet Union. It just gets to be so big and so ponderous that it won't work anymore, and we have to go back to square one. America's about to go that way. The economy has just gotten to the point, and the regulation and control has gotten to the point that pretty soon it's just going to disappear. Meanwhile, back on the farm, hell, I'm not even complaining about it. We're in a period of time when Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history, and George Gordon isn't even complaining about it. They're not watching, measuring, counting, and interrogating me. They used to, but they stopped. And they stopped when I stopped doing business with them. You know, I never did do business with the mafia, and the mafia never was a problem to me. I did do business with the government, and they were a big problem to me, and when I quit doing business with government, they ceased to be a problem. So, if you do business with these institutions, let's try it again. If you've got medical records, what do you got medical records for? Well, because I'm sick. Why are you sick? Because I eat pickled pig's feet, swine's flesh. And I drink too much beer and I smoke cigarettes. You got an unhealthy lifestyle, and so, you know, you get sick and then you need medical records. I don't. Magazine subscriptions, emails, medical records, bookstore purchases, library circulation. I used to have a library card. I had this library card, see, and it said on the back over here, something like subject to Boise City Ordinance, thus and so on, so on. I got kind of curious. So I went down to Boise City Hall and I said, here, now give me this ordinance. And I looked up the ordinance. And do you know what the ordinance provided for? 90 days in jail and a $300 fine for failure to return a book. You see, if you borrow a book, they come back and they say, well, we got this fine. We'll fine you a nickel a day in those days. And that nickel a day fine would go on for 30 days. Well, at the end of 30 days, you owed a buck and a half. And if you didn't pay that buck and a half or return that book, well, then they presume the book was stolen. You're not going to return the book. If you don't return it in 30 days, you ain't bringing it back. That's a theft. Now, if you steal a book from the library, they carry it a step further, and they say, okay, well, now we're going to fine you $300 and or put you in jail for 30 days for this larceny. Now, I don't intend to steal a book from the library, and I never did, to my knowledge. And I was a little late from time to time, and I'd send them their 5 cents or deliver the 5 cents, and I brought the book back. But when I saw that the potential penalty was 90 days in jail and a $300 fine for the failure to return a book, hell, I never checked a book out that was worth more than $20, did I? Why would I want to risk $300 and 90 days in jail against a $120 book? I said, hell, I can buy a lot of books for $300 and 90 days off work. God, I could buy a bunch more books. So I've been out buying books. I've got a pretty neat library, and I own all the books that are in it. I don't loan them, but I don't have to borrow them either. So when God said that you will lend to many but borrow from none, he wasn't whistling Dixie through a straw hat. I avoid lending my books because a lot of times people don't give them back, so I don't want to run a lending library. But I own all my books, and I've got a lot of them. And you students out there that have been here to school, you've seen my library. I own all those books. Why don't you do the same thing? Why don't you buy those books and own them? Give up the credit card, the library card. And then you solve another problem. The FBI can search the library records until hell freezes over, and they'll never find what kind of books you're reading because you're not checking them out of the library. Let the terrorists use their library cards and let the police catch the terrorists reading bad information out of the libraries. And let you and I buy our books privately, keep our mouths shut, and then we can read things like the Ku Klux Klan newsletter and nobody will know anything about it. Isn't that kind of wild? Now, with these items and a method to sort through the information to seek patterns, anyone can be caught if they continue to follow these same patterns. Now, it may take some time, but it has an extremely high probability of success. For example, the police know that your parents' 50th wedding anniversary is coming up on the 20th of June. They can now make plans for mail intercepts, phone taps, on the theory that you're unlikely to pass by such a significant date without some contact with your parents. Or, if you're on a specific medical regime, particularly if it involves rare drugs or expensive treatment, they can track down everyone receiving that medical treatment or drug. Any use of identification accounts that they might have access to is liable to be used to narrow down the search area. So if you have an AOL account and you log on, they can tell what city you're in, sometimes even what neighborhood, and a significant bonus for any searcher. Even lesser uses like phone calling cards can tell them what state you're in, which can allow them to ignore the vast majority of the country. Hell, you know, if I can just pinpoint you to be in California, well, then I don't need to look for you anywhere else other than California, do I? No, boys and girls, you want people to be looking for you in all 50 states simultaneously. You don't want people to know about this nervous twitch that you've got in your eye or in your nostrils. So if you've got the nervous twitch, you got to get rid of it. And if you've got the nostril twitch, you got to get rid of it. You got to work on that. Eliminate that. And each time you eliminate one of these 92 items over here, you expand the search area, make it more difficult to identify you. It gives you just that much more privacy. After all, the guy that's got this eye twitch over here in a group of 100 people, you know, he's the only guy in here with that kind of a twitch. Pretty hard to miss that guy. You want to be able to blend into the crowd. I remember an old guy named Frank Rocha, you know, he's a pretty nice old guy, and he wore bib overalls and drove a 1949 GMC pickup with the fenders rusted out, and they were flapping as he drove down the road. And everybody thought old Frank was as poor as a church mouse. Until the Nielsen girl embezzled $250,000 out of his bank account up at the Bank of Lolita. And then everybody thought, why, you mean old Frank Rocha's got $250,000? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And nobody ever suspected. Nobody would have ever thought. Every once in a while, they'll uncover some old dead woman who's a bag lady and find out she's got $100,000 she's pushing around in that shopping cart, you know, that she's pushing around, picking up rags. That's what privacy's all about. Bag ladies have more privacy than doctors in America. All right, we're out of time, boys and girls. We'll have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here next time. Remember, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All right, we're out of time. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, of course, God willing. And until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.